I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I get to talk to KK Downing. So you will know him for his maybe 40 years in Judas Priest, and he's got a new band, KK Priest, and they're putting music out as we speak, and there's lots of exciting things coming your way from that band, which we talk about. He is a wonderful human being, and we have a lovely chat. Get to hear all about what it was like seeing Jimi Hendrix playing some early shows, and we get to open, like, you know, the mind of somebody that's spent, you know, the last 40 years in, you know, up to his neck in rock and roll. And so it's a lovely kind of chat, and sort of we work our way through his career, and it's lovely, and he's such a warm and kind guy. You're really in for a treat. Before I press play on that chat, just a few thank yous. So thank you to Ben for helping facilitate that. Thank you to 76 for producing the podcast. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network. And also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then when you get to the end of today's episode, go and explore the back catalogue, because there's well over 300 episodes now. And if you like your rock and roll and your metal, then you can hear me talking to Tommy Lee of Motley Crue. You can hear me talking to Foo Fighters. You can hear me talking to Papa Roach. I've had all manner of rock and rollers on. And if you like producers, I've spoke to Butch Vig, who produced, obviously, Nirvana and Sonic Youth and Smashing Pumpkins. There's a huge back catalogue of chats with not just musicians and producers, but comedians, actors, you know, all sorts of interesting creative people. And they're all answering the same song questions that that I asked today's guest. So go explore that. And also, if you'd like to support the podcast, the ways that you can do that is simply just give us a like, a love, a share, a retweet on the social medias. We're on all the obvious platforms. Subscribe, that way you won't miss an episode. That would be lovely. And if you really want to support it and get access to another vault of episodes and radio shows and video episodes, then you can do that at Patreon, Patreon, patreon.com/ Off the Beat and Track. And then each week I put up radio shows, as I said, and video episodes and all sorts of stuff over there. And that'll cost you 79p a month. Can't even get half a lager for that. So that all goes in the pot to help kind of keep the podcast rolling. So I think I've waffled on enough now, and I'm going to let someone do some talking, and you're in for a real treat, because this is a vault of rock and roll chat you're about to hear. So it gives me great pleasure to say, please enjoy KK Downing. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the Cacao Bar, and there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in off the beaten track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Right, we good to go?
Yeah, all good, Stu. Where are you, mate, in the world? I'd like to know where people are.
I'm in Essex today, mate.
Essex, okay, mate.
Sun's shining as well. Where are you today?
I'm in Shropshire.
Nice.
Farming country.
Love it. Love it. Right, well, before we get on to today's playlist, I just want to kind of just get your thoughts really over, you know, we're in the UK, a majority of people seem to be really happy that we're reconnecting with each other and live music is happening again and pubs, clubs and concerts are reopening, which is, you know, for me, I'm thrilled at it. But just to sort of cast our mind back over the last 16 months, how have you found that time, both personally and creatively?
Well, I would say that it was, isn't it funny? It's like fate. Is it fate or it's something weird, isn't it? Because the thing is, after a 10-year spell, I mean, I was busy, but not actually like recording albums and stuff like that. So after 10 years, you know, December 2019, I decided to sit down, scratch my head and everything else and try to and put an album together, you know. And I've got to say, I hate to use the word fortunate, but it was good for me to get stuck into that project, really, because the thing is, I had no idea what was about to come at me, you know, or the world or everybody. So really, it kept me kind of busy because I locked myself away Christmas 2019. Everything happened pretty fast, and the idea was to deliver the album by the end of April, which I was kind of on track to do because I got Ripper over, got our drummer over, got the drums and vocals down. They went back. The day after they went back, everything closed down.
Yeah.
So it all had to stop. The reason I needed to deliver the album for the end of April, there was a bit of contingency built in there, but we had some nice shows booked that year. And we had some nice shows booked this year, but they've all got cancelled, sadly. So everything kind of got put, you know, like the studios closed down, the hotels closed. You couldn't go anywhere. But at least I had the vocals, I had the drums. And so I could then have the luxury for the first time in my life to just, I can tweak this and tweak this and play with it and experiment and just to make sure that I'm 100% happy with it. I've never had that luxury in my life, sure, you know, because usually the money or the time or both runs out and you just have to hand it over. So this is kind of good in a way. And then when things opened up later that year, I was able to get down to the studio in Essex with Tony, a bass player who works down there. So I was able to reamp and do some more backing vocals, do a few more bits and crank the guitar really loud and do a few more bits, you know. So, and then I came back and then I, you know, tweaked a few things and went back down. So most of that year was taken up, really. I was quite happy doing that. I was doing other things at the same time, you know. Trying to keep myself healthy because it was a nightmare, wasn't it? You know, they only allowed you to go and walk for like 20 minutes or something.
I'm used to
doing a lot more than that. Do you know what I mean? I have to, otherwise I feel like, you know, definitely the hamster on the wheel type of cabin fever. You start to get this not anxiety buildup, but you know, to sleep well and to function well, mind and body, you know, need to get out there. And because all the golf courses were shut down, tennis, everything was shut down, swimming pools, gyms, everything. So we ended up just going on long walks as best as we could, really, cheating a bit, really, getting lost.
Yeah, it was really nice. You know, one of the things that I noticed straight away was so many people were out walking, and no, I like to have a run every day, and a runner generally, if they run past another runner, will acknowledge them in some way, shape, or form, a little nod or a little wave. And where I live, it's not that I wouldn't say it's the most friendliest of counties, and but during, you know, those initial weeks of being starved of connection with people, even out walking, people on the other side of the road would kind of like, hello, you all right? And there'd be like a wave. And it was like, I think we was just so desperate to sort of speak to people because we'd been locked up. It was really nice to sort of, you know, just see a different side of people and realise that, you know, we do need interaction and connection. Do you know what I mean?
You do. It was a weird thing. It was exactly that because, I mean, I kind of reside on my own, which I'm quite happy about because, I've got total freedom. But apart from the odd phone calls, and I don't know about you, but I felt that people were calling you less and there wasn't the conversation about it. So if you do go out on a walk and somebody did, you know, you saw somebody and you had a few words, it was quite almost a bit kind of, it was a bit bizarre. And then you've got other people, you know, you'll be on the same side of the road, you've got your masks on, and they'll cross over the road, you know. Yeah. And you think, oh, come on, taking it to extreme a bit. Yeah. So there was this kind of vibe going on, and it was very odd for a while, wasn't it? Quite a long time, for several months. It was very odd and strange. I'm going, okay, fine, you know.
All right, well, look, we've done a retrospective over the last sort of 15, 16 months, and we're going to do a full retrospective throughout your life and career. And I'm going to start today's playlist by asking you please to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro. Can you remember what you sent over to me? Because I can prompt you if you need them.
Yes, no, definitely. And I didn't take too long to think about it because it was the song that had the biggest effect on me. And it's common knowledge. I tell the story all the time. The first time I ever saw Jimi Hendrix live, he opened up with Foxy Lady. And I can remember it. I'll relive it a million times. You know, it was a Coventry Theatre. It was unreal. So he's there because he was headlining over Pink Floyd, The Move, Nice with Keith Emerson. You know, it was quite some bill. Andy Fairweather Lowe was on, I forget the name of his band. But anyway, but he came on, and a familiar figure, because you know how flamboyant he dressed and everything, you know, and the spotlight hits him, and he's got his back, and he's by the Marshall Stacks, you know, and he starts the beginning of that vibrato of Foxy Lady, where it builds up, you know. And you're thinking, is it going to die off or what's going to happen? No, this is Jimi Hendrix. He's going to do what he wants it to do. And it built up and he held it for like longer than ever, you know, and keeping everybody really tensed up like me. You can tell I'm getting really excited about it. Thinking about it. I'm thinking about that vibrato there and I'm thinking, he's going to let it go any minute. And he sort of turned around and he just bounced into this shape and hit that chord, you know. I mean, for me, that was the best song intro that I've ever seen. And the place went mad.
Yeah.
It went crazy. People rushing the stage, jumping from the balcony. It was insane, you know. The best gig I ever saw in my life.
I mean, sonically, he was different level. But like you say, to then just turn around and you then are looking at Jimi Hendrix, because there weren't many people as cool as Jimi Hendrix. He looked so cool, didn't he?
Well, no, because the thing is, the first shape when he goes down on the floor and the guitar's in his legs, you know, with that first note, it's just such an effect on you, you know. And it did, and everybody rushed the stage, and I was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, and that had happened to me a few times in my career over 40-odd years or more, you know. But it can happen. And I saw it at the Albert Hall. I was at both those shows as well. People were jumping from the balconies and landing on people. But Jimmy was, you know, his managers or promoters, at times they must have said to Jimmy, Jimmy, you've got to control it. You've got to calm people down. Because I saw him at Colston Hall, Bristol, 2 weeks after that first show. I think it was about 2 weeks. And he did calm it down. He opened up with Sergeant Pepper, you know, and it didn't have the same effect because people wanted those songs off that amazing record, you know.
But I mean, in regards to intros and Hendrix, I mean, we've had people choose Crosstown Traffic before because that's an instant call of arms when that starts. And Voodoo Child, you know, when the guitars just chime in on that as well, it's like...
Yeah, like you say, you could pick any one of those songs for me. You know, it was just the fact that I happened the first time I actually saw him live. You know, and that extended vibrato, really milking it. You know, God knows how long it was, but it was just kept us all hanging on. You know, when he went into it, it was just majestic. You know,
Wonderful! What a moment! I mean, how amazing that, you know, you got to see Jimi Hendrix so many times. That's wonderful. Very, very jealous of that. Listen up! I've only got another new sponsor, Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label, and if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Well, let's stay in the formative years, because I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Yeah, I think, like I say, I tell the story, and it is a long story, so I won't go into it, but like when I was a kid, we didn't have any music to listen to because, like, we were white working class, snot-nosed kids, you know what I mean? And we were always like my sisters, they had Elvis and Cliff Richard and all of the pop stuff, but there was music around blues, and blues was great, and it was all we had. It was all we had. We were struggling, you know. So early Stones I was interested in, you know, a couple of the Animals tracks, you know.
Where was home then? Where was this?
I grew up in West Bromwich, you know. Yep. That's where I was born. I'm quite proud of it. There's quite a music scene from there, you know. But yeah, I think that, so the song that I heard, and I don't know what year it was really, but it was the one that probably, it stuck with me, and it was Eva Destruction by Barry Maguire, which was a protest song. Mm. It didn't resound as a protest song to me. I just liked the song because it wasn't pop, it wasn't classical, it wasn't jazz. Do you know what I mean? It was an alternative to blues. So this was at the point where I was still looking for music, finding music that I liked, but all the music I liked didn't exist at that time, you know. So, and that's, I embarked on the journey to try to create, and, you know, and that music. And that's what I did because when we started playing, like lots of other bands as well, what we played, you couldn't categorize it. So people said, oh, they're a progressive blues band to start with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you tried to get a gig, they said, well, what sort of music do they play? You know, we would say, oh, we're progressive blues, you know, because we didn't know whatever else it was, really. Yeah. It wasn't progressive blues, We were not a prog blues band. But and that's why we couldn't get signed to a label, and we found it difficult to get gigs because the music we played was didn't really have a label on it.
So do you think that that scene evolved into what I guess we're going to call metal?
Yeah, absolutely. The evolution, really, in music, and this is for all bands, I'm talking about Cream, I'm talking about Fleetwood Mac, I'm talking about everybody. All of those great guitar players were very much influenced by the blues, and they did a lot of blues standards. Hence, they became progressive blues bands, and they were great. And it doesn't matter who it was, Rory Gallagher, Savoy Brown, Jethro Tull, Led Zeppelin, Cream, you know, Wishbone Ash. It goes on and on forever. But those guys were taking blues standards and kind of changing them and doing their version of it. You know, like Cream, they did Crossroads with his great long improvised solo, which was wonderful, you know. And but that's a blues standard song, you know. But those guys all honed their skills on the great Robert Johnson, Howlin' Wolf, whoever it was, you know. But I kind of skipped that, you know. I came in, as much as I was a big fan and loved all those bands, and I saw them all a million times, it wasn't really what I was looking for. But, you know, and that's why I had snippets here and there, very early Stones, like I say, Trog's Wild Thing, You Really Got Me, 1965 by the Kinks. You know, why did I like that song when they were a pop band? They were in the charts all the time. You Really Got Me, because it was a riff-orientated song. And that's why when I saw Van Halen supporting Black Sabbath in about 78, 79, and Birmingham Odeon, and they came in and ripped into that song, and that's why I liked that song back in 1965, because that song is heavy metal.
Yeah.
So, but that was the evolution was blues, progressive blues, rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. And that was the journey I traversed, because one day I was a progressive blues band that in the press, the media called me. Then they called me, oh, hang on, you're a rock band? Okay, I'm a rock band today. Oh, no, hang on, you're a heavy rock band. Okay, I'm a heavy rock. No, you know. No, sorry, you're a hard rock band to start with. Then you're a heavy rock band. Oh, guess what? Oh, no, Judas Priest, you're a heavy metal band. Fine, I'm happy with all of it. You know,
I love the fact that you're just updating your CV every couple of months. Oh, hang on, no, we're heavy rock now.
Yeah. What do you put down on your passport? So you just put musician. Oh, I'm a musician. You know, otherwise you would put rock musician when you're or something like that. You know, or heavy metal musician. But no, be on the safe side because it might all change. You know,
brilliant.
We didn't want the customs to get tested. Hang on, you're not a heavy metal band. Or something else.
I mean, if you had to sort of pinpoint what the emotion would have been hearing Barry Maguire, what would the emotion have been?
I just think it was just, I was just so glad that I could hear something that seemed to be deep and meaningful. I didn't know what the guy was trying to get across, and I still, you know, don't really know in depth, you know, so I know the lyrics. But at the end of the day, it was still very memorable. It was melodic, but he wasn't singing about love and all of that stuff. You know, the guy was obviously trying to get a message across, but it was just deeper and meaningful, and it wasn't pop, it wasn't classical, it wasn't any of those genres, and even I couldn't label it, you know. So when they said it was a protest song, I thought, what genre of music is that? I know what folk music and stuff like that, but even I couldn't pinpoint it. But I think it was alternative to me, so it kind of.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, let's stay in those early days. And for track three, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Yeah, well, I actually put down, I know I put down, and it, Shalala Lee Boy, who I thought were a great band, you know. I liked them, even though they were a pop band, you know, the Small Faces, because to me, they seemed to have something about them, Stevie Marriott in particular, and I was right in assessing that, because he was edgy, you know, and he seemed to be a guy that was playing something that he really didn't fit him. I don't know why I drew that assumption, but lo and behold, when he went into Humble Pie, you know, I mean, then it just tells me that I was right in making that assessment. But when he would do those songs, like whether it's Itchy Park or whatever it was, it was something that was reluctant pop. I don't know what it was. Just something I'm thinking, this guy's made for more of this. So I became a fan with early Stones and the Trogs. And if I can remember inscribing those bands on my school satchel, because that was kind of all I had at the time, you know, in the very early days. But it was something to latch onto when you watch Top of the Pops. When those bands came on, I liked them, you know. Early Stones, they looked very eclectic and moody and like, you know what I mean? And I didn't really see them as a blues band. I saw them as something that was a bit kind of, you know, kind of a band with attitude, and I like that, you know. And they were all kind of got their own kind of persona, you know. And it was like Bill Wyman, you know, don't look at me while I'm chewing his gum. And Charlie Watts, you know, bless him. He wants a day or two ago, you know. And they collectively together, I'm thinking Brian Jones, who is he? What planet does he come from? But anyway, they were all great. Yeah. You know, they had an attitude, and I like that.
If I'm right, I don't think Marriott wrote Shalala Lee.
No, it was a cover.
It was written by Kenny Lynch. The comedian Kenny Lynch wrote Shalala Lee.
I'm not sure I know, but
yeah, I'm a lot pretty damn sure it was.
But it didn't have to be that. But the way he just delivers his vocals, he's not a pop singer.
Yeah. It's too much soul in that voice, wasn't there?
And the way he moves there, I'm thinking that guy, you know, is, and he was, you know, because I had the honour of, you know, doing some shows with him and stuff like that, you know, and, but I mean, but just look at the voice and the stuff that he did, you know, with Humble Pie. I was a big fan. And I'm thinking, because I was never a Peter Frampton fan, but I am now. I'm a big, huge fan, and I have been for a long time, because his guitar playing was always really quite melodic, you know, and that's not in a bad way. So the contrast with him being quite a melodic player, where Marriott was more of a minor player. You have more of a major, more of a minor. And myself and Glenn were very similar to that, you know.
Yeah.
Especially early on, you know. And I wasn't a big fan of it. But after a time, I thought to myself, do you know, something might become of this. Because if I have it all my way, it's all going to be really heavy and doomy, you know. And I think if Glenn has it all his way, it's going to sound all very commercial. You know, so when Glenn came up with the idea of Rock-a-Roller, the song Rock-a-Roller Woman, you know, I'm thinking, oh, man, but I'm thinking we might need this because it took us this long to get a record deal.
Yeah.
You know, to get a record company on side and to get them to put more money in, we might need to have this option, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was the route that we went, you know. But similarities with Humble Pie. But now, obviously, as I've kind of not exactly, well, I haven't mellowed, I was going to say, mellowed. I haven't at all. But I've changed my ideas with melodic guitar playing, you know. And so, instead of ignoring these great players, and I'm going to mention some names now, guys like Prince, who was a great player who could do more than just melodic stuff, you know. But instead of me ignoring him, because that's kind of what he did, he's really essential to listen to for a guitar player now, you know. And so is Peter Frampton, what he does, what they bring to the table.
Absolutely.
You know.
Track 4. First record you bought from a record store, please.
Well, I was never a record buyer. I never had any money to buy records, to be honest, you know. I remember my mum going into Woolworths, and when you used to get 3 singles for £1 by people that weren't the real singers.
Yeah, yeah.
I say that out of interest because a lot of listeners might not remember this back in the 60s, but if you went into Woolworths, they had cheap singles there, sung not by the real artist, and you can get 3 for £1. That is bizarre music history, isn't it? It's worth going into the history books, but that used to happen.
Well,
I never bought records because I didn't have the money to buy them, you know. But when Jimi Hendrix came along, I'm pretty sure the single came out before the album, but I remember getting a hold of it, you know. But they were expensive, you know. Yeah. I mean, I was working at the time, but I was earning less than £5, you know, which was still okay at the time, you know. But it wasn't cheap to buy records, you know. Yeah. You used to have to, like, budget yourself to buy, like, one a week.
Yeah.
Or one every 2 weeks.
How crazy that was. I mean, then when you would get that, I mean, you would really cherish that, wouldn't you? And now to think within a split second you've got the world of music at your hands. It's crazy, isn't it?
I'm going to tell you this now, and all of your listeners, Stu, are going to relate to this. Our beloved vinyl record collection and mine's upstairs. You know, it's the fact that we had to damn well work hard to get those things. And we treasured them like gold.
Yeah.
Putting the needle on and not. People saying, oh, can I lend you? No. You know. No. You can't lend it.
But I've said it many times on this podcast. I think one of the things, and I don't want to, you know, come across as a granddad and say, no, I'm just vinyl for me. My vinyl collection is in the room behind me now, and I adore it, and it's a massive part of my life. But I'm also a fan of the fact that young people can access any kind of music now on streaming services. I think that's really exciting as well. However, I do think, and I've said this many times on this podcast, the one thing that is lost now is the album artwork. And I think when you got you got your record, it was like, I'd put that record on and I would sit and stare and read every possible sleeve note. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And we did, because we put the record on and we got the album cover and we were there. Hopefully it was a double gatefold.
Oh, what a bonus that would have been.
I mean, when we read all the information and everything, all the detail, which still sit there, all, sit there for the whole album and more, just keep looking at the pictures, you know, because it was all we had. We
and it was all you had. It was all you had, because now you can go on social media and you can see what your favourite rock stars are having for breakfast, what, where they're down the gym. You don't want to know that. I loved the fact that that was somewhere else. That was elusive. These were out of hand, you know, out of touch. You couldn't, you didn't know anything about them.
It was all you had. If you saw somebody in a pub, you know, drinking a beer, you think, oh, I wonder where that pub is. I really want to know where that pub is. How can I find out? I want to know where he is, what day of the week that
brilliant.
What colour shoes he's got on, you know. But this is why we can't part with our record, with our vinyl collection.
Absolutely. No. Absolutely.
In fact, next time I do something with you or whatever, I've got my record collection, I'll just at random, I'll pick three interesting albums out. Maybe we can have a chat about them.
That's
quite interesting.
Sounds great.
Albums that I think people might not have, there might be some rare stuff in there. But obviously, because I'm of an age, there might be some interesting stuff. It's not extensive because of my age, the girlfriends over all of those years, 50-odd years of depleted my, you know, a lot. Every time that one of them goes, some of my vinyls go as well. You know, that's why.
All right. Well, I'm going to move forward a little bit for track five and ask you to tell me the song that soundtracked your time clubbing. But you put a little addendum on this that it would have been pubbing.
Yeah, pubbing. Yeah, it was pubbing because, you know, that's what we did, really. I mean, so what used to happen is, that if there wasn't a gig on somewhere where you could go and see a band, and they used to, because most pubs and that, you know, were gigs. There was a lot. I was very lucky when I was a lad, a teenager, because there was kind of always something going on, you know, Birmingham, West Bromwich, Walsall, Wensbury, Dudley, you know, this, you know, it's probably like London. You've got all of these suburbs and there's always a pub with a band on. So we were quite lucky. But if there was a night where there wasn't something going on, we would go to a pub where they had a jukebox with some songs on that we could play.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a pub not too far from where I lived called the Rising Sun, and they had a jukebox, and they had kind of that would be more kind of popular songs that did kind of chart in a way. I know I put down Black Knight by Deep Purple. I would go to that pub because I love that song and I didn't have it in my collection, but it rocked out, you know. But they had some other stuff on there. They would have songs like Hey Joe, stuff that had been in the charts that they bought at the time, but they got lazy and left them on the jukebox, you know, because they couldn't keep, they thought, oh, it's been in the charts, we'll leave it on there. So we would go down there and play. But I remember specifically Black Knight because I was so in love with that song.
Yeah.
You know, because quite simply, the big highlight there, which I do and I'm a big fan of, is the double whammy, up and down by Blackmore. You know, when he goes for, and this is how we used to break tremolo arms all the time, and he did as well. The three biggest breakers of tremolos, I'm sure Hendrix used to go through them like there was no tomorrow. But because we used to do this as well a lot, you know, the up and down with a floating bridge. Richie, me, and early John Roth, we all had to have reinforced tremolo bars on our straps. In the early 70s, I didn't know those guys did it, but we all did. I did it. In fact, Rob Halford's dad did mine, because the tremolo arms used to break off because they used to heat up in the friction.
Yeah.
And they were just thin anyway with playing them, the Fender ones. They kept breaking off and we used to have to keep drilling them out. So Rob's dad kindly did one and re-tapped it and made me a steel bar, you know, and it never broke again, you know.
Amazing. I mean, I've just thought of something then. I was just talking about, like, my vinyl buying now generally involves charity shops. And if I'm in a charity shop, what I always see Can you remember them Top of the Pops compilations, generally with a woman with a bikini on, and that would always have been cover versions of like songs from the sort of 70s. So with that in mind, are you aware if you anyone ever covered Yous on them?
I don't know. It's an interesting question, but I remember them.
Yeah.
I'd say they were big sellers, I'm sure, you know. But I don't know, because obviously we did Top of the Pops a few times, but whether anybody does us, I don't know. I really don't know.
This is one of the questions I love to ask guests, because, you know, I mean, everybody over a certain age in the UK would be obsessed with Top of the Pops. It was your once a week where it was the Bible. That was where you got to see your favourite pop stars. You know, you'd never see them anywhere else, you know. The internet wasn't there, you know. And so, you know, might get a snippet of them in a newspaper or a magazine, but Top of the Pops, you could see them in all their glory. And so growing up, I presume you grew up watching Top of the Pops.
Absolutely.
Tell me about the time when you got the call to say you're going on Top of the Pops, and when you got to Top of the Pops, how was that? Did it deliver?
Yeah, we had fun. We were lucky enough to do it a few times. It was quite a thing, really. I felt that when they first said, I'm thinking, I don't know about this, you know, we've got to think about this carefully, you know, it's nationwide TV, you know, but I don't think we had much choice, because the song, was it Take on the World? I can't remember which song it was the first time we did it, but it was really quite successful as a single, because obviously it was all over the radio.
Yeah.
And it was getting on for 500,000, the sales, something like that. So we didn't have much choice, but the thing is, it was just about coming through to that time. So I know the one time we did it, we turned up at the studio and Saxon were there doing Wheels of Steel as well. So I'm thinking, this is starting to come, you know, and I think a lot of guys, you know, it was coming, metal was starting to get into there. And to me, this was a good thing. I only saw it as a good thing,
yeah.
You know, to spread the word of like metal and to try and get more people into the fold and, and rock out. So it was a good thing, but you know, it was a bit weird. I mean, we did feel out of place. I'm sure that the guys in Saxon or whoever else did it, AC/DC, Maiden, whoever did it when they did it,
yeah,
would have felt a bit out of place. I can remember walking into the studio. I know there was these girls doing a routine there, and I thought they were school kids, I thought they were school girls. You know, they were tiny, and it was like Pam's people.
Yeah.
I thought it was some kids from a school. I'm thinking, hang on, I need to look closely here, because yeah, usually your eyes pop out of your head, yeah, when they come on, you know, and they look larger than life.
Yeah.
They had shorts on, they had their like daytime routine wear. So I remember that well. And we did it with the Osmonds, which was weird, because
that's quite strange, isn't it? That's a combo.
Because we went on and Rob pulled his ball whip out, and he was going to use his ball whip, you know, because we used to have badges made with "I've been whipped by Rob Halford." We used to hand them out and stuff like that at gigs. And they went down a storm, you know, people loved them. They used to fight over them. I don't know why, but they did. But anyway, so. And then we got to the feedback that they come back. Don and Marie said, if he uses that ball whip, we are not going to perform. I said that to the producer. And I can remember going, somebody says, you've got to go into makeup now. And I said, oh, no, I'm fine. No, you've got to go into makeup now. Because they had whatever happens, you know, you can't be seen with a greasy, spotty face if somebody's going to put a BBC camera on you. I suppose that was their criteria. Anyway, I sat in the chair like we don't like a kid going to the dentist the first time. Yeah. And Marie was in the next chair next to me, and I knew it was her because I could tell by her hair and that. Just a minute, I thought, that's Marie. That is, you know, she got the cucumbers on the eyes and everything, you know.
Brilliant.
And all of that. And the lady came up to me, and she'd got all of these, her hands were in wraps, and Marie and all of this, you know. And the lady came up to me and said, she took one look at me and went, oh, you'll do, you're fine. And I went, oh, there you go. And I felt like I was so close to saying something to Marie. I didn't, I could tell it really, because I was a bit upset about her. Them restricting our performance, you know.
Yeah.
Rob didn't, but we had our moment of subterfuge after the show. Really, when we were exiting, we did have a bit of a rant to Donnie and Marie. I hope they've forgiven us by now. but I'm thinking, let your fellow musicians act, do what they do. You know.
Of course.
I mean, keep your nose out of it, you know. You're lovely people and you're great and talented artists, but let the mighty priest do what the mighty, if Rob wants to wield the bullwhip, it's all showbiz, it's entertainment, isn't it?
Of course it is. All right, I'm going to take you home for track six, and I'd like a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
The home county?
Have you gone country?
Home country, yes, it was country, wasn't it? Sorry, did you say county?
I did, but you'll be about the 250th guest that has gone, oh, I thought it was country, so don't worry, you're in good company there, mate.
okay, well, yeah. Well, yeah, I could have done, obviously, because there's quite a few musicians, but I did put down Peter Green, didn't I?
Yeah.
And the reason I like Peter Green so much is because he had so much talent, you know. And I say that because I like people that have charisma, and like Hendrix had incredible charisma, you know. So, but not only are they great musicians and they look great and present well and perform great, you know, they have the charisma, but also what they actually, you know, the songs, what their contribution to the evolution of our music, our beloved music today, is very important to me, you know. So what his contribution was very, very significant. And for the simple reason, you know, because I tell the story about when I was a very young teenager and all we had was blues, really, and some pop. But it was very important. The step from blues to progressive blues was very, very important. And the songs that he was writing, because when he was in the Blues Breakers with John Mayle and that, you know, the albums he did was absolutely, he was wonderful and he was majestic, and he seemed to be carved out for that. But he wanted to progress. So he formed Fleetwood Mac and he started writing songs, you know, songs like Oh Well, Green Manalishi, Albatross. And these songs, you could barely pin them to the progressive blues board, you know, because they were kind of so incredible as progressive blues, because they were blues songs. Mm. But there was such a twist on them. I mean, if you take Albatross, for example, you listen to that, I mean, that is an incredible progressive blues song, you know. But it is a blues song, but it's extremely progressed,
yeah,
you know. And it, because it's so beautiful and majestic, I mean, the tone of the guitars and everything that goes into that. But look at the other songs. I mean, Green Manalishi, well, I mean, we did that song. We've done different versions of that song, you know, so much so that people probably think it is a Judas Priest song. But, you know, and there's other songs as well. Yeah, I'm trying to think of now. But if you look at what Peter Green did, the songs, it's really quite forward-thinking and futuristic. And that did lead people like myself onto, on the evolution, the path of evolution of this music, this wonderful music that we love. You know, Fleetwood Mac and Peter Green was very, very instrumental. You know, the other bands that were playing progressive it was more identifiable as blues, but you had to think and listen carefully to a lot of stuff that Peter Green did. And so for that reason, I picked Peter Green because he deserves, it's what he created in such a short period of time, you know, just literally a few years. It was quite incredible because Hendrix was just 4 or 5 years to us, wasn't it? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, with Fleetwood Mac, it was kind of a similar time, a small time period, but they became and always will be great.
Well, for the last track, I'm going to ask you to tell me, please, a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
And I put down, yes, I did, Polar Nights by the Scorpions.
Yeah.
As circa 72, 73, I'm guessing it could be 71, but it was a long, long time ago. It was a long time ago. But obviously, because we've got the majestic early John Roth in there, just letting it rip there, doing the vocals as well, you know. And when I heard that, because Hendrix hadn't long passed by the time that happened, and you've probably heard the saying that some guitar players in the world, not because they can stand up to the ability of the mighty Jimi Hendrix, but, you know, there are guitar players that were influenced by Jimmy because they had so much appreciation for him, his skills and what he did for music and what he did for them inspirationally. And I was one of them. Uli's another. You know, and there are quite a lot of Frank Marino from Mahogany Rush. You know, they call us the Sons of Hendrix, not just because we can hold the candle, but they affected us, you know, and we're just so much in appreciation. You know, I was in so much of appreciation of Jimi Hendrix that I couldn't play his songs, didn't want to. I was devastated when he died because I'm thinking, Jesus, this great thing in my life, and now it's gone, you know. Yeah. So it was kind of good for me to be able to hear the song Polar Nights by the great Uli John Roth, because he too was like a brother to me at the time, I think, you know what I mean? I saw, you know, we were kind of had similar kind of thoughts. And I would suggest everybody checks it out. It'll be on YouTube, Polar Nights by Uli John Roth and the Scorpions.
Well, we make it very easy for listeners to go and check that out, because we do a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all the songs that we've spoken about on, so people can go and listen to all of your picks. As we are halfway through 2021, and we're looking that the second half is going to be a lot more connected and back to, I guess, what we were more familiar with. With that in mind, what are you looking forward to from the rest of this year, personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Well, we're waiting for gigs to come along. You know, like I say, we had some super shows last year and this year, but they were cancelled. You know, that would have been fantastic. But not to be. So obviously at the moment we're busy promoting. In fact, we've just released another video today, Raise Your Fist, which is the fourth video from the album. So we're busy doing stuff like that, still promotion. But in the background, I'm steadily putting some material together, which is sounding great for the next record. And I'll continue to do that until the right tour comes along. Unfortunately, we've got this terrible kind of two-year backlog where bands and promoters and gigs are kind of catching up, fulfilling stuff that was being booked from back then. Mm. So we need to get all of that out of the way. But it all depends on success, really, Stu, because, you know, if, the better chance we've got, if the more success we can have with the record, then the more options will be to us, you know, to. But when we go out there, we just want to go out there and do a world tour and just like the old days and just keep on going, you know. But we'll be very busy working on the next record anyway. So if we can get that done, or the mainstay of it done, when we get that out there on tour, we can just stay out there for as long as, you know, because we'll have another record in the pipeline. So that would be a great position to be in.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to seeing that tour present itself in the future, and new music. Best of luck with the stuff that you're putting out at the moment. It's been an absolute pleasure talking records with you. I've had such a lovely time. Thank you so much.
Let me thank you, Stu, giving me the opportunity to say hello to you and all of the fans. Just like to say, if you can be, I think we've all learned to be patient now. It's one of those things, isn't it? It's a matter of having to be, but we're very much looking forward to some playing some gigs for everyone, and we hope to come to as many towns and cities near you as we possibly can.
Wonderful. You're a gentleman. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stu. Take care, mate. See you next time.
There you go. Could have spoke to him for hours. It was so nice. It was just lovely seeing. Just seeing the smile on his face as he was sort of just talking about the music that's been so important for him. And you know, when he was, unless you're watching this on Patreon, then, you know, when he was talking about the beginning of Foxy Lady and that vibrato before, you know, Hendrix just chimes in with Foxy Lady. Like, he was literally playing air guitar and just lost in it. And that was so lovely to see. You know, that's somebody that he's clearly got, you know, a very, very, very unhealthy obsession with music. And long may that continue. Absolutely lovely episode. And I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I did, you know, being privileged to sit there and talk to him about his career in rock and roll. Go check out the new records. I hope he's got a load of new fans today from doing that episode, because he was an absolute gentleman. Right, I'm back next time. In the meantime, as mentioned at the beginning, give us a like, love, share, retweet. Go check out the Patreon and get access to the video episodes and all the other goodies and radio shows and that. You can find out about everything you need to know about this podcast at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. Be excellent to each other. Thanks loads. Bye bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.